This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Now, if you Google Arati Arumugam, up pops what I think is the most fun job title I've come across. She is chief elf at her children's event planning company based in Singapore, which is called the Party Elves. Now, this job sounds like a barrel of fun. So why would Arati temporarily leave that to sail 1,200 nautical miles across the Atlantic to experience firsthand the devastating effects of single-use plastics and toxins on our oceans? We're about to find out right now. Hello, Arati. Thank you for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
So you're going from party planning to ocean exploring, and I have to know why.
A lot of reasons. I think it's something that we all need to be interested in and get involved in. I'm not a conservationist. I'm certainly not a scientist. But I think as a member of community, it's imperative that I just kind of understand a little bit more about what it is that's really happening. I mean, we read so much. There's so many differing opinions about what's out there, what's to be done, what we can do. But there doesn't seem to be a viable solution. Mm. And I get that we won't be able to get a viable solution in the short term. But I think for the events that I do and for the communities that I engage with, this is perfect in terms of education, in terms of information, to equip myself with.
Okay. So it's called Expedition Round the World with Two X's because it is an all-female voyage. How did you find out about it? What is it exactly? Where are you going?
Okay, so they call it EX Expedition.
Okay.
How did I find out about it? I think it's all a bit of a blur because everyone asks me this and I actually can't tell you. I think someone sent it to me on a Facebook link and I had a read and I thought, wow, how exciting. Mm. And this is me. Like, people who know me know that I just get a bit bored after a while and just push myself a little bit.
Bored of being a party elf? A chief party elf? How could you?
So it interested me, and I just wanted to do a little bit of research about it, and then I did so, and I thought it would be quite an interesting and enriching experience.
So the entire voyage is actually 2 years in length, of which you'll be a part of a small leg. Tell me a little bit more about the voyage itself. Where is it starting from? Where is it ending? Where will you be?
Okay, so we begin. So I'm on the maiden voyage. Mm-hmm. We get on the boat in Plymouth, okay, in the UK, and then we sail all the way to Azores, mm-hmm, which Portugal. Is in Portugal. There's a set of islands in Portugal. We do community outreach in Plymouth as well as in Azores, mm-hmm, and then the next guest crew join when we exit.
And what's the end goal at the end of at the end of your voyage and at the end of the 2 year voyage?
So at the end of the two-year voyage obviously is part of several other voyages that Emily Penn and her group have organized, mm, over the last 4 years. And the end solution is to find more upstream solutions and alternatives in terms of, you know, what we can do with the plastics that we do find. For me, the end objective is, I want to say it's a work in progress, but mm, essentially is to get more information so that we can actually start awareness here. Because, we're surrounded by oceans.
Oh, yes.
And we've got amazing beaches, but then we're plagued with all this styrofoam on the beach and, you know, simple things like bottle caps and you know, the tops of toothpaste, mm, tubes, to put it, you know, quite plainly in what you see. And then there's stuff that you don't see. Mm. So for me, the immediate impact would really be the education portion and how I can incorporate that into community events going forward for kids, for children, for their families, as well as the wider adult group.
Okay. So you are an entrepreneur and soon to be work-in-progress explorer. And I know from our conversation that community is a common thread that runs through these experiences, right? What causes are closest to your heart besides the environment?
Women and children.
Why?
I guess because I'm a woman. And I think if we don't develop the children, we're kind of doomed. And as a woman, you just hold so much power in one little finger just by doing the basic things that we do every day that we take for granted. And yet, there aren't enough opportunities, there aren't enough places where their voices are heard. So yeah, that's really why.
Who were some of the most significant women in your life?
Well, my mother, for one, definitely. She was not a wallflower. but in her own way, she just pushed through and did so much quietly, professionally, you know, voluntarily, with us, with the rest of family, and just anyone who kind of came in touch with her. You could just feel that legendary power. And then she's part of, you know, four other sisters. So there are five sisters in her family. I am surrounded by powerful women all the time, you know, on WhatsApp, on just around me. They're inspiring, very inspiring.
Well, I'm sure that this power and your mother's ability to be able to push through was perhaps one of the leading factors in you starting off as a corporate type, a chartered accountant, in fact, and then taking a leap of faith to becoming an entrepreneur. Why? Why that leap?
Wow, that's a loaded question. okay, so typical Sri Lankan Malaysian family, right? You study hard, you get your professional degree, and you go forth and produce.
Yes.
Right? Accountancy was something that I chose mainly, I think, initially mainly because I didn't want to become a doctor because both my parents were doctors and I didn't want to be in their shadows.
Okay.
And then eventually accountancy just made sense for me because it was general. But after a few years in corporate, I just felt that I wanted to be in a little bit more control.
Okay.
Flawed as that may have been. But because you're never in control.
No. It's an illusion.
Ever. and it's actually worse when you go out on your own because you have to do everything yourself and you have to push everything yourself. And you have to create your own structures and all of that kind of stuff. And initially, when I went out on my own, I guess it was almost like, all right, let's see if I can do this.
Okay.
I don't think my parents are very happy. And to this day, I do not know if my mother agreed with my decision.
Right.
But she still supported me and kept going. I mean, like when I first went into business, I used to be a florist. I used to do wedding flowers.
Okay.
And I did quite a few weddings in Malaysia. And Amma would come with me and do things like do the cars and tie stuff up on the thing,
right,
which you just don't expect the head of ophthalmology in Malaysia to be doing this.
No, but she is an Amma first and foremost.
Yeah, and so she did that kind of stuff with me, which helped.
Yeah.
It gives you strength.
I can imagine.
I think also it gives you the gives you the impetus to know when to change and know when you actually need to be looking at what your strengths are and how you need to be capitalizing on that.
I'm glad you mentioned change because I want to talk about how difficult it can be to effect that change. We'll take a quick break first and do that when we return. I'm speaking to Arathi Arumugam, entrepreneur and soon-to-be ocean explorer who will be participating in EX expedition around the world. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and this is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm speaking to Arathi Arumugam, who is an entrepreneur and soon-to-be ocean explorer, and she seems to relish taking on new experiences. Or does she? Arathi, what you did, of course, was very straightforwardly a change of career. Not a straightforward process, but a leap in career. It's not something that comes easy to a lot of people. Looking back, would you have done anything differently in that journey? Or are you a no-regrets kind of person?
Oh, I'm always a regrets kind of person. That's the problem, I think, with my head. But no, I still don't think I think the only thing I would have done differently is perhaps, start with more than just me. I would have tried to get a couple of other partners in. One. Two, I would have tried to secure a little bit more funding before I started. I think those are the two things that I would have done differently. And also it's that self-belief. I think you need that self-belief to actually push you past that, okay, it works, I now need to go and get some cash.
Right.
That self-belief push doesn't come until a little bit later. For me anyway. I think other people, it comes faster.
Right.
And it depends on when you actually break out into corporate as well. So yeah, it's a tough one. I think everybody deals with it differently. Going back to your question, why did I do that leap from corporate to entrepreneurship? I think I just got to a point where I couldn't do what I was doing anymore. I didn't want to do audit. I didn't want to do financial analysis. I didn't want to deal with brokers and all their...
I want to say who does, but I work at a business station, so I better not.
No. I mean, but then, having said that, I still miss it. I still miss that rush. I miss the board meetings. I miss all of that kind of stuff, and it's relevant stuff. You know, I mean, it runs our economy.
Okay, so you're also a sought after public speaker. And part of Keynote Women Speakers, which is the world's leading directory of women public speakers. How did you get involved in Keynote?
Highly sought after is a big stretch, Sumitra, but thank you. I've always been a speaker. All through school, debating and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And training in my previous lives. But with Keynote, I want to expand reach and... work on the next phase of my life.
Okay.
And speaking is something that I enjoy. I like the attention.
No shame in admitting it at all.
And I think I'm good at it. So that's how I got into it. The way Keynote was formed is it's formed by a group called Primetime in Singapore, which is a women's group, and they've been around for 20-odd years. And they found that every time... Well, basically Meta, who's the founder, whenever they went to industry, you know, events, it would be a women's event, but there would be a panel of men, or the keynote speaker would be a gentleman. And, you know, when questioned, organizers would always say, oh, we couldn't find a lady speaker.
Mm.
We couldn't find an industry expert.
You're not looking hard enough, mate.
That's exactly it. And so Keynote was born. Basically, because it was like, well, now you have no excuse.
Yes.
So when they formed Keynote, it was really to bring together keynote speakers and more importantly, keynote speakers from different industries so that people can not say, well, we couldn't find anybody within science or we couldn't find anybody who is an engineer because it's not true.
No.
They're all there. So that's how Keynote started. I got into Keynote through that route because they were looking for speakers. They had a training program and all of that kind of stuff. So it's twofold. They have a training program to help people who want to be speakers and have never spoken before, and just to give them a little bit of a foundation, I guess, in terms of how you find your topic, slides, voice projection, that kind of stuff. And because I don't already have a track record of speaking professionally.
Okay.
Because obviously keynote speaking is all new, right? As a profession in terms of going out to speak, it's become the buzzword now. So I didn't have that. So I went through the training program to get into the directory. But then obviously there are lots of very accomplished speakers on there who have been speaking for a good 10 years, training for a good 10 years, who build their business via speaking, who are also founder members and also members of Keynote.
What are some of the topics that you enjoy speaking about and why those topics specifically?
So I speak on community, but my main topic is actually about IVF.
Okay.
The pitfalls of trying to start a family the traditional way and what it does to an individual within the traditional social constructs of what you think starting a family is about. That's really where I started my topic. So it kind of falls into the area of speaking up, of sharing your experiences and through my experience, which I didn't share at all for a long time, it's an issue actually with a lot of ladies who want, or actually not just ladies, couples who want to start families and can't, mm-hmm. and go through IVF and failed IVF and miscarriages and wondering whether they need to adopt and, you know, the difference between IUI and IVF.
And also what it does to a marriage.
What it does to a marriage, what it does to your confidence, what it does to communication, which is where the speaking up comes into play. That's actually also quite a big part of why I decided to do this expedition voyage.
Okay.
There's a lot of research in terms of what plastics are doing to our bodies.
Yes.
That relates to fertility in men and women. So there's, there are lots of differing opinions. Mm. The research doesn't go deep enough because obviously you can't really correlate lots of the stuff. Mm. So I'm hoping that this expedition will help me kind of pull some of those strings together.
And tie them together.
And tie them together and inform and instruct some of the stuff that I speak about.
Okay. You said something really interesting earlier that I want to go back to. You mentioned public speaking and the reason why you went into it is because it's something that you enjoy. But more importantly, it's something that you're good at. I find that this is a trait that a lot of people struggle with, to be able to admit that they are good at something. Why do you think people struggle with this?
It's taken me a long time to actually be able to say that I think I'm good at it. Mm. I think it's a self-confidence thing. I mean, I think a lot of us have a self-deprecating strain that you just kind of...
Also perhaps from an Asian context.
Yeah, because you're always told, and that's what I was thinking about, because you're always told to be humble, right? And do really well, but keep your head down and just keep plugging along and someone will notice. Mm. And in this day and age, that's not always true.
No, I can imagine how harmful is a harsh word to use. But if you tell this to a child, if you tell a child that you need to keep your head down and not shine and not be the center of attention, and then you wonder why 30, 40, 50-year-old women have issues with confidence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a personality trait. Mm. Okay, because there are lots of people out there who are confident enough in their skill to say, I'm good at this, right? And this is my expertise. And it's easy when, for example, if you're a doctor or if you're a lawyer and you've been working a couple of years in that industry or more than a couple of years.
And you're credited with that accomplishment.
Right? Yeah, yes. And you hone the skill and you will see my traditional snobbery here, but it is backed with fact. Mm-hmm. It is backed with a hell of a lot of study, right? And you've done your PhD, your master's and all of that kind of stuff. It all contributes to that confidence, right? So people in my position, where we've built almost like a portfolio lifestyle, which isn't backed by fact. I mean, I'm not an accountant anymore, traditionally. I'd run events. It's not backed by any fact. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, I speak on something that is backed by scientific fact. But again, I speak on the feeling of it, the emotion of it, the community construct of it and what happens within social structures of it. And there's no fact other than hearsay, my experience, right? So finding the confidence to then go and say, I'm good at this, is hard.
It is.
It's really hard. And I think it's also the validation that you get from people around you. And not everybody's going to tell you, you're good at this.
No, not, especially not if they believe in, as you mentioned, the more traditional constructs.
Yeah. So back to your question, why do you think people take a long time to say I'm confident at this? I think it's because not enough people have told them that they're good at it. And two, not enough people have, they don't have enough evidence in terms of, okay, what do I think is good?
Right.
Because your levels of success or what you think success is defined by where you are in society and what you've been told.
So how do you change that level of subjectivity then for a child, for example?
Mm.
What do you do? What kind of values do you instill in them to kind of say to them that, you know, listen, 15 years down the line, I'm telling you, this won't matter. It will not matter. How do we do it?
Yeah, I actually tell my daughter exactly that. It's hard. It's really hard. It's I think being a parent right now, it's just, this is a bit weird. But I find myself caught between traditional parenting,
okay,
which is what I was brought up with, and then trying to be the cool Joe, and saying, okay, try your best and we'll deal with it when we get the results. And secretly you're just like, oh my God, please, please, please do really well.
You know, you say traditional parenting, but you had an umma who came with you to your floral setup events.
No, true. But yeah, my early years were very traditional, Sumitra. I mean, like, really, not in 100 years would I have imagined myself doing what I was doing, what I'm doing now, and the fact that umma would have come and done, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, never in 100 years. If you had seen how we were brought up as in that stage, no way, not a chance. So going back to how do you bring up children today to make sure they've got confidence? I think it's also allowing them to find their way, which we were allowed to, but we had certain parameters that were set, and I still think that's important. I don't think it's okay to just take them away. I think the parameters are important. It's just how you set the parameters up, and there is no perfect science. Maybe ask me in 30 years and I'll have a better answer. I mean, I'm still struggling, as I'm sure every parent struggles, and everybody who deals with children. But, you know, you see in my work, you see how different families deal with their children. And it's interesting. I mean, that's part of the, like, when we create content. For example, we did an event with the National Parks Board a couple of months ago, and it was a street festival where they closed off streets and everybody could walk around. And because it was in a park, the idea was you go and find a leaf and you come and do leaf printing.
Okay.
So we had this massive table with lots of paint, and you can just come and paint the leaves, whatever, and do, like, stamping, like, almost like batik, but leaf, right? And it was so interesting to see the different parenting styles just from that simple exercise, right? The parent who wants the child to do well within what they think is doing well. The parent who wants the child to find their own way. The parent who wants the child to do well, but wants to seem like they're stepping away. It's really, really interesting just to watch this. I really got lots of insight just from these events, but it's really hard to kind of inculcate these habits on a day-to-day basis when, you know, it's a routine. You're trying to get the kids out of school, you're trying to get to work, you've got 101 meetings, you come home, you need to put food on the table, they need to get to bed by a certain time. I'm yelling all the time, right? I mean, there's no space for, okay, you guys do whatever you want. You know your... I mean, come on. It's not real.
Yeah.
And it's also not something that you achieve within a day. It's something that you achieve over years of guiding them and them guiding you as well. Because as an adult, as a parent, whether or not this is your child, your niece, or your grandchild, whatever, I think there needs to be that stepping back and giving them space to teach you, to teach them.
Beautifully put. I wish you all the very best on EX Expedition around the world, right?
Yes.
Safe travels, Sarathy.
Thank you. Can I just give you the crowdfunding
page? Go ahead, please.
So I am looking for support to get on this boat.
Okay.
So it's give.asia, so http give.asia/exexpedition Arathi, and my name is spelled A-A-R-A-T-H-I. So you can go to that page, and if you think this is something that you think is worthwhile doing, or you're too scared to get on that boat, I'll do it for you. Give freely, give largely. And there will be updates on that page as the voyage progresses.
Right.
If you'd like to give more than just the $100 or $200 or whatever, corporate sponsors, because the expedition team realizes that it is a rather expensive affair to get on, they've allowed for us to actually support brands that support us.
Oh, okay.
So we can wear merchandise on the voyage and, you know, post it on social media and all of that kind of stuff. So if you do have a plastic agenda, if you do have a conservation agenda, if you have a women in STEM agenda, this would be a perfect opportunity to get your story out there on a global scale. The fact that I'm the first Malaysian, first Singaporean resident to be on something like this, and I'm on the maiden voyage, we're going to have press from all over the world cover it when we leave. Definitely BBC is going to be on there.
Right.
Expedition as a team, as a concept, has already been featured in Time magazine this year. So it will be featured again. So it's a great opportunity for collaboration.
Absolutely.
And I would love to collaborate with someone.
Okay. Well, safe journey and all the best. May the winds guide you and your voyage to safety. I've been speaking to Arathi Arumugam, entrepreneur, community connector, and soon-to-be ocean explorer, about her zest for life and creating a more connected world. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.